This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. If you want to get a sense of what's really going on with the digital out-of-home media business and the technology ecosystem that feeds into it, you need to pay attention to a guy like Mark Boydman. That's his gig, looking at the opportunities and the risks of the business. As a partner running the marketing services wing of New York investment banking house Peter J. Solomon Company, that company has been deeply involved in the sector for the last 5 years, putting Boydman right in the middle of the business as an advisor and the lead on some big mergers and acquisitions. With me in my home office and him talking at his iPad at the company's Midtown Manhattan offices, we had a great chat about the state of digital out-of-home and what's going to happen. We also revisit his lost career as a cruise ship host. So you're a lawyer with a law degree from McGill in Montreal. How did you end up in New York doing investment banking?
Honestly, I worked for Royal Caribbean in the summer of law school. And before that, when I studied management at McGill, for law school, I worked for Royal Caribbean aboard cruise ships as an entertainment host. And so,
really?
Yeah, so that led me to...
Wait a minute. What were you doing as an entertainment host?
So the first summer, I worked with kids doing youth staff, so taking care of kids, so being a camp counselor, taking care of kids. But then I ran this program called the 18 to 21 Club. So I was working with 18 to 21-year-olds aboard cruise ships, and I was only 21 myself. Actually, I was 21 my first summer myself. So it was quite the event, I should say, for it was a 13-week contract. And then my second summer, I went back and I was working with adults of all ages. You know, the guy who's, you know, calling bingo and doing horse racing and all that.
Nice. But that
led me to Paul Weiss, who's a law firm here in New York, does all the work for Carnival Corporation. But having worked for Royal Caribbean, that gave me a taste of the United States and working in the U.S., even though we were aboard the ship, you know, going out of Miami and Orlando was where the ship went out of. So that gave me a taste of that. And then Paul Weiss, again, representing Carnival, I really wanted to work in the cruise ship industry, I thought. And then, of course, I started working at Paul Weiss. I summered there and then was recruited there and worked there and did a lot of private equity and M&A and worked with various investment banks, including Lehman Brothers. And then that's how I ended up at Lehman Brothers. And then spent time at Lehman until Lehman went bankrupt. Barclays bought Lehman, stayed at Barclays for about 5 years, and then moved over here.
Oh, okay. So if the investment banking thing didn't work out, you could have ended up, you know, calling bingo and Carnival Cruise Line.
That's right. I always tell people, don't give me a microphone because I can get dangerous. In fact, I asked Christina, who's as I mentioned to you earlier, who was in our marketing group, whether we had a microphone, because that would change the feeling of this whole podcast.
Well, at least now I know you have a fallback position if the market tanks.
That's right.
Of course, no, we'll be going on cruise ships. So what I'm absolutely not part of the investment industry and have a pretty weak track record of investing myself. Can you tell me what your role is all about? Because I think everybody knows about investment bankers, but I wonder how many people know what they actually do and what your role is day to day, week to week, kind of looking at the digital out of home and tech industry.
Sure. So we are advisors, essentially investment bankers. Everybody thinks that we're only about capital and money, which is obviously a big piece of our business because we help clients raise money. But we really are advisors. So we provide strategic advice to clients. It's industry advice, it's mergers and acquisitions advice. And so if a company in the what we call the media and tech space, or even getting more specific, the out-of-home media or retail technology space, in-store space, and any companies in those sectors, we provide them strategic advice. And it's ongoing advice. So it may be just talking about their strategic priorities, what they're thinking about, on a day-to-day basis. And then if there is an acquisition opportunity that comes about because the company's for sale that they want to buy, we can talk them through that. If they want to sell their company or a piece of their company, we can talk them through that and advise them on that. And so spending time in sectors, and we like to say that we live and breathe the sectors we advise on. So we believe that nobody knows the industries we cover better than we do. And so we help them execute the transaction. So executing the transaction means, in the case of a sell side, if a company decides to sell themselves, so think of any digital signage or other retail tech company decides to put themselves up for sale, we'll think through valuation, we'll prepare all the marketing materials, we'll think through who we think are the best buyers, and we have relationships with those buyers because we cover the sector quite closely. And then we go out and market the company, find a buyer, and sell the company. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what we do. And then on the capital side, it's the same thing. If somebody wants to raise money, as you know, we recently raised money for a company that does out-of-home media. We'll go out and raise capital with the investor community and our relationships and use marketing materials to help raise the capital and then negotiate the transaction, the terms and conditions, and close the deal so that the company can have that funding to either pay themselves a dividend or grow the company, convert assets through technology, whatever the use of proceeds ends up being. Mm-hmm.
So they're going to engage Peter J. Solomon because you guys have subject matter expertise and vertical market ties that's going to expedite the whole process. And there's not going to be a lot of time invested in explaining to the investment bankers what on earth you do, what the company does.
That's right. It's for that. And also our parent company. So we're 51% owned by Natixis, which is one of the largest and top investment banks in Europe. You know, that provides us with M&A expertise and capital markets expertise across the world. So Natixis has, you know, close to 15,000 employees or more actually than 15,000 employees across the platform. So we can tap into those employees in, you know, various countries all over the world. And that's helpful because, as you know, today the business is far more global. And so when we're selling a company, whether that company's in the US or Europe or Asia, frankly, there are buyers from all over the world. And so tapping into their network is incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been looking at this space?
Well, I've been doing investment banking and I guess M&A more broadly, given the time I spent at Paul Weiss on the legal side for almost 20 years. But the actual out-of-home media sector and the retail tech space, really only since 2012.
Okay.
So it's been shorter, but having said that, we spend, and that's what's different about our firm. So when we say we live and breathe, it means that we spend all of our time literally just in these niche areas. So it means we like to say that we spend 100% of our time here. And frankly, we do, because we love the sector and we invest in it. And we can talk about all the reasons why we like the sector. But when we say we invest in it, it means we invest our time. I mean, it means we spend time covering this sector quite closely.
Now, you say you love it. Did you love it as much 5 years ago when you first started looking at it?
We did, because I think we saw farther ahead. We said, look, what's going to happen to the landscape? Where are things going to go? We saw that we thought that media channels would fragment. I think we thought it would happen more quickly. I mean, 5 years ago, when we started to get into this, we said, well, what's going to happen to television in 5 to 10 years from now? We thought linear television, meaning traditional television programming, we thought would be completely gone. It's not gone, but it's certainly the audience is fragmenting, right? You can no longer get 30 million people to tune into, you know, a show like Seinfeld or any show on television for that matter. So if you want to aggregate an audience today, it's no longer on television. And if it's no longer on television, where are you aggregating an audience? Potentially online, but there's tons of issues that we saw even 5 years ago with online advertising and online media. So we liked out of home. We said, look, this is a channel where technology is going to help the business. Technology is a true friend. It's the only media channel, frankly, that we saw and we still agree with today, where technology is a friend to the business.
Mm-hmm. So my time in out-of-home, I started an out-of-home company in 2003, like way, way, way too early, and had those conversations with media planners who said, well, there's no real bucket of money for you. We've got a small alternative fund and, you know, kind of money that we fool around with, so to speak, but there's nothing there. Is it now at a point where there is a very well-defined digital out-of-home buy that media planners think about?
Well, yes and no. So let's talk about that. But let's also talk about the investor community. So 5 years ago, when we talked to investors about digital at home, they had that same response. There's just not enough dollars that are being spent in out-of-home media. And the retail tech market in terms of in-store advertising is so small, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time or money here. And we had to spend time educating the investor community that this is an area that's going to grow and that, you know, in terms of aggregating that audience is going to be a sector where technology will help the industry. Because even online is subject to fraud and subject to ad bots, and you don't even know who's really watching or clicking on ads. And with mobile, you know, it's such a small screen. And finally, over the last 5 years, the investor community has completely turned around. And now they're looking 5 years out and they're getting much more comfortable. And so we've seen a much different approach from the investor community. We now get calls from investors, private equity firms, venture capital firms, family offices, strategic diversified media and technology companies that want to buy or invest in out-of-home media. And that was a far different story back in 2012. And then when you look at how the media is being bought and planned, and to your question, there are more dollars being allocated to out-of-home. Even the sector has grown. If you go back to 2012, it was the total out-of-home media pie in the U.S. was about just over $6.5 billion. And today it's about $7.5 billion. So, and approaching $8 billion. So if you think of, you know, what's happened to the industry, it's grown. So the overall out-of-home media pie has grown. Now it's grown, but not as quickly as we would have liked, because there's $180 billion of ad spend in the U.S. So when you think of out-of-home media approaching $8 billion, you know, out of 180, wow, that's pretty tiny. But we think that over time, with especially programmatic buying, the silos between out-of-home and print and online video and mobile, you know, everything's going to come together and people are going to see that out-of-home, you know, has a pretty attractive reach and a recall rate. And frankly, if it becomes easier to be bought in the marketplace and levels the playing field with online video, because as you know, it's very easy to buy online video or Facebook or YouTube advertising today, it's getting easier to buy out of home. So we think that there'll be more opportunity to buy the media as it gets easier to be bought. And again, as these other media channels face challenges, where technology only helps out of home through digital signage, digital screens, improving attribution. Whereas, you know, for the internet and online video, technology is not helping, right? Young people today want to just skip the ads that they see online. You're not seeing that in out of home. People welcome advertising in out of home because it's something that can't be turned off, frankly. So they're used to it, but also it's contextually relevant, right? In the specific location you're in, you're getting the advertising being delivered to you in a place that makes it relevant to you. So you're going to want to receive that advertising because it's solving an urban problem or need that you have in an environment that suits you well.
How is it easier to buy when there are so many programmatic platforms out there, so much demand side stuff, supply side stuff? I just see that market being really, really crowded. And for a planner, how do they figure out, okay, which one do I use?
Well, when we say easier to buy, we're comparing it to, you know, for example, Facebook. If you want to buy a Facebook ad, you just go online and you can simply buy it, right? Yeah. Even at 3 o'clock in the morning from your living room. If you want to buy a digital billboard or a digital screen in a physical location, you usually need to talk to somebody. Right. The media specialists have make it seem like it's a very hard medium to buy. You can't easily compare a location to a location. You know, we see that changing over time. We think the media specialists will need to adapt because as the out-of-home media companies build their own DMPs, as people get more comfortable buying out-of-home media online in a programmatic way, whether it's real-time bidding or not, and that's, you know, there are different degrees of programmatic. It doesn't matter. At some point, that's going to get figured out. And when we say easier to buy, it just means easier that you won't necessarily need to talk to a person to buy it.
You don't have to take a meeting.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to take a meeting. And also, you don't have to find somebody, find a time, right? It's going to be all the everything will be able to be done online on your phone or on your tablet, whatever device you're using on the go. So if you're actually in a physical location and you see a screen or big massive billboard, you know, on Sunset Strip or somewhere that you like, you should be able to just pick up your phone and say, I want to buy that billboard, right? Mm-hmm. Just like you can do online with Facebook. And that will happen at some point, and you'll be able to buy audiences. So I say you'll be able to buy a location, but it's never going to be like that. People are going to want to buy an audience, not necessarily a location. So if you can set up the right platform where somebody can buy an audience, out of home is going to be that audience, because it's going to have aggregated a large audience and it can't be turned off. And you're going to know that people through their mobile phones or other forms of attribution actually spend time in those physical locations. So you can prove to the advertisers that these advertisements were actually seen by human beings. Mm-hmm.
One of the arguments I've heard around programmatic is the concern that it will commoditize the media and reduce the media value. So the CPM or whatever you want to describe it as will go down. Is that a valid worry?
So yes, we talk to companies and that is a concern. For example, if you've got really high-end inventory and if you take the inventory in Times Square, is that inventory going to be commoditized or be part of a larger group of inventory and they may not get the benefit of their premium inventory? You know, we see that as certainly something that needs to be evaluated, but we're not concerned by that because if it's done correctly, people will understand that if you want to reach a certain audience, you're going to need to pay more for that audience, and that's going to capture the premium the premium audiences or the premium inventory. But it's certainly a concern, but that's why a lot of the out-of-home media companies are setting up their own private exchanges that aren't publicly available. And through those private exchanges, there's a way to protect your inventory. So again, there's degrees to programmatic in these exchanges that should make everybody comfortable. And it's the inevitable. I mean, and it's just like we like to look at the travel agency model. If you think of back in the day when you used to book a flight, you used to have to go through a travel agent. I mean, that you know, model was not sustainable. And we don't think the model today where you need to speak to a person to buy out-of-home media is going to last. I mean, it's just not. And by the way, the out-of-home media companies have resisted it themselves because they've invested very heavily in the relationships they have with media specialists, mm-hmm. all those dinners and money spent over the years in building those relationships, but also in terms of dollar spend, right? They've spent so much money with these specialists that they too are, they, you know, they're delicately dancing here. They're doing both things. They're working with the specialists, but they're also working on the future, which is, you know, buying this medium or making it easier to buy the medium. And that once that happens, that's going to change the industry in a massive way, because once out of home becomes as easy to buy as other media channels or even close to as easy to buy, a lot of the younger buyers today are going to migrate to an audience that's large, that mass audience, that it's proven that it works, that there's data and metrics to support that it works, and where they can stand out. Today, you know, getting 5,000 messages a day, you know, you no longer stand out anymore, even online, frankly. So you need to stand out. And out of home certainly has the capability to stand out. Mm-hmm.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
The digital out of home, the history of digital out of home has seen a lot of roadkill, a lot of companies who set up place-based networks in, you know, just, you know, think of any venue really, and it's been tried. Why has it not worked for so many? And on the flip side, why has it worked so well for a company like Outcome Health, which is just growing like mad?
So there's reasons for all of that. The point of care sector, which is Outcome Health, is part of the point of care media sector, yep. which you've alluded to, which is advertising in doctors' offices and hospitals. We really like that sector, and the investor community likes that sector because you can demonstrate through third parties the script lift in doctors' offices. And that is pretty powerful for an advertiser to be able to say, if I advertise in a location, that location or that doctor's office or that healthcare practitioner, there'll be more prescriptions that are written for my specific drug. That is pretty powerful, and that's why it's worked well. You know, some of the other digital at home networks over the years, you know, if you think of somebody like an RMG Networks that used to do the advertising seatbacks of airplanes, they too could prove that somebody was sitting in a seat and looked at the advertisement. So that too can be interesting in its own way, but you could never prove that somebody then went out and made the purchase. You couldn't confirm, close the loop. Here with companies like Patient Point, Outcome Health, Health Media Network, and others, you can actually, you know, close that loop and show that a prescription was written. So that's pretty powerful. But with new technologies, advertisers like, you know, Pampers or for diapers in the OBGYN's offices, those things can also close the loop to show that it works through mobile phones and proximity networks with geofences, whether it's beacons or other forms of proximity networks. You should be able to say that, you know, this expecting mom came to see her doctor, then went down to the pharmacy or the drugstore, convenience store across the street, and bought Pampers. You know, that's happening, that's being tested today, and that's going to be the future. So that's a pretty powerful network. So you've asked what's gone wrong with many of these other networks. Some of it is size, frankly. You know, we've gotten a lot of calls from people who say, oh, we're thinking of putting up screens in this type of location and creating this type of network. It's tough, right? You need scale. And scale is pretty critical. If you don't have enough scale, it becomes very hard to get ad dollars from agencies and from the advertising community. So you need to have scale, which many of these networks don't have.
And how do you define scale? Like being a top 20 DMAs?
You need to be, well, for national advertising, you certainly need to be in the top DMAs, but it's also number of screens, right? Number of screens and dollars. So if you think of, cinema in the United States, you know, that's close to an $800 million digital to home revenue, you know, bucket. That's pretty powerful, you know, $800 million in cinema. Okay, so digital to home and cinema works, right? $800 million was spent, about $800 million in 2016 in cinema. You know, some of these other networks, when they've only got, you know, $5 or $10 or $20 million of spend, you know, it becomes very hard to capture share and to capture the eyes and ears of the advertising community. So scale, dollar scale and screen scale is critical.
And the types of advertisers, does that matter as well? Like we talked about point of care, and you've got big pharma that's putting money into that. If you are saying, I'm going to put screens in, I don't know, nail salons or whatever it may be, I get those calls too. How do you respond to that? Are there certain ones that just have more value based on who are going to be the advertisers?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you can create a niche that's very targeted. So if you think of Captivate and Elevators, for example, you know, they've got substantially all the market in the U.S. It can be a very targeted form of advertising. So if you want to reach the busy office professional as an advertiser, where else are you going to reach them? So it becomes very targeted. And even though the elevator advertising market is smaller, certainly much smaller than the cinema market, it's certainly there's scale there in terms of reach, because they're in, you know, all the best locations with their elevators, but they're also reaching their targeted audience. The same thing for National CineMedia and Screen Vision in the movie theaters, right? They can reach a young millennial audience that you can't always reach in other venues. So I think for them, as long as they can reach their targeted audience, that's going to always prove to the advertiser, but also the agency community, that this is where they should be spending money and putting dollars.
Does out-of-home, digital out-of-home buys cross borders at all?
Not usually. It makes sense to have relationships with companies that do what you do in other countries, because you can refer each other business. But cross campaigns, we haven't seen a lot of that. But it's certainly helpful if, you know, a major national advertiser in a different country is advertising on your network, to be able to have a relationship with somebody in that country, because they may refer you a piece of business and you'll send them back maybe some kind of a share in that. But that's helpful. We haven't seen any cross campaigns where somebody says, I want to buy, you know, all the advertising on this network in, you know, the United States, Canada, and Latin America. We haven't really seen that today.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see the maturity of the industry in North America versus what's out there in Europe, Middle East, and particularly Asia?
Yeah, so look, from when you look at those markets, you get even more excited about the United States, right? In terms of the penetration, we in the United States have very low out-of-home media and certainly low digital out-of-home penetration relative to those markets like Europe and Asia. And so if we can just increase the penetration just by a small amount, which means when I say penetration, it means today out of home is about 4 to 4.5% of total ad spend in this country. And if we can just take that up a notch, you know, we'll see massive dollars coming out of home, which will benefit everybody. And so that's one thing. The other thing is we see the industry continue to grow because we're going to take dollars from those other media channels. I mean, 180 billion of US ad spend that continues to grow, and we don't see it slowing down. But as it does, even if it does slow down, there's still an opportunity for out of home to take dollars from other channels. So out of home is going to take from print. You know, out of home is going to take from radio. We see that happening. I mean, that's our view, and we'll see if it pans out. But certainly online video is going to take a lot of that share. But as people and advertisers are already starting to pull back from online advertising because they're seeing that it's not the dollars that they thought, the return on their investment they thought they were seeing is not necessarily true. In fact, we've seen some major CPG advertisers who've said, we're going to pull back on our online advertising initiatives because we're spending money and we don't even know if a human being is actually seeing those advertisements. So that's why we think out of home should benefit from those trends and shifts.
There are, I know that you focus on the out-of-home side, but the whole ecosystem you're a part of, you're on the board of the DSF and so on. There are one hell of a lot of display companies out there, display hardware companies, software companies, and so on. Is there investment money out there for those guys? Do you look at that at all, or is it going to have to be a function of consolidation for a lot of the ecosystem?
So it depends on the companies. Those with scale, there's a tremendous amount of money for them. So those with scale, people want to buy into. They want to own those companies. Private equity would love to own some of the companies that do a lot of digital menu boards and software in store. In terms of some of the smaller software companies, the much smaller ones, yeah, it's tough. I mean, they definitely need to consolidate. We would love to see, you know, all of them come together because then you'd have one of, you know, a scaled company, which would be attractive to private equity. Today, there's just not enough scale in terms of revenues, but also profitability for a private equity firm to come in, even a lower middle market private equity firm, it becomes difficult. So our hope is that over time, either companies will disappear because they're not profitable. And so that will help some of the other companies that are profitable and growing. And those companies will get bigger. And then, yes, we do hope there'll be consolidation in time. And frankly, across geographies, because these companies are getting more global. Many of these software companies are already global. And as they continue to do that, there are companies across geographies that could also come together.
You were mentioning things like beacons and analytics. Are there technologies that you're paying attention to that you think are really helping the marketplace?
Yes, certainly. By the way, beacons, it's funny. We talked to some investors like, oh, beacons, that didn't work, thing of the past. We disagree with that. Beacons work. They're not for every application, and they're not for every out-of-home media, you know, a company and opportunity, but they certainly work. We're very strong believers in proximity networks, and so we'd like to see more companies roll out proximity networks and the ability to interact and engage with a consumer in a physical location. Again, that's contextually relevant. We think that's powerful. And so we're going to see more of that. Each company needs to explore the technologies that are available to their specific network. For example, if you look at TouchTunes that's working with Foursquare now, you know, that makes sense and works well for TouchTunes. We've seen statistics that TouchTunes that put out that blow us away. That's the kind of stuff that we'd like to see across the entire out-of-home media market. And that's being tested by, you know, all the companies, the large ones, the smaller ones. Outfront has done a great job with their OnSmart Media program, and their technology has just been, it's been incredible. Obviously, they won the MTA contract, and that, you know, made sense, complete sense to us, given the technology they have and what they've rolled out. Others have rolled out technologies that have been, you know, very impressive, both that integrate with mobile, and the statistics around integrating with mobile has also been quite powerful. So that's an opportunity for out-of-home to tap into mobile dollars, to tap into those mobile RFPs. You know, we sold a company in Canada earlier this year that was an out-of-home media company, an out-of-home advertising company that was doing a nice amount of revenues coming from mobile, coming from mobile RFPs. And that helped their sale process. And we sold that company to a telecom carrier who thought that was impressive growth. And it was. And we're continuing to be impressed by the opportunity for out-of-home to integrate and tap into mobile dollars, but also to blur the definition of what's out-of-home advertising and what's mobile advertising, and blur the definition of out-of-home and mobile.
Hmm. You mentioned the MTA contract. If they really do 50,000 screens, they have to sell one hell of a lot of advertising. Is it a big risk for them, or is that a market that, because it's New York, they could do that?
I think the CEO of Outfront said it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. We agree with that. It is a very unique network. It is a once in a lifetime opportunity. But Outfront, look, that's why it made sense for them to win that contract. They own the technology that allows them to roll out screens in a very cost-efficient manner, screens that talk to one another, that's part of OnSmart Media. And so if that happens, and which we believe it will, I mean, they're already doing it in Boston and in other markets, it's going to be unbelievable. I mean, it's going to be a network that has the reach and scale and digital that you know we've never seen before. And it's going to be unbelievable, because if you think of public transit, it's public transit today is the highest usage you've ever seen. There's more and more people needing to use public transit, and mm-hmm. public transit needs to be more efficient. So with a communications piece and an advertising piece led by a company that's going to roll out digital screens, yeah, we think it's going to work. We're confident it's going to work, because the way they've structured the rev share means, and just based on back of envelope math we've done, means that, you know, it's not one of those networks where they've overpromised and will underdeliver. We think actually it's going to be quite the opposite. We think Outfront has left themselves quite a lot of room here so that they can actually, if they need to roll out more screens or if they need to change it up to spend more money, they've left themselves quite a lot of room. This is a pretty profitable network. I mean, it's the largest ad network in the world with the most powerful audience in the world. So it's going to continue to see large dollars flowing into it, especially as they convert to digital. And even with more digital coming into the New York market, you know, it's pretty special with the dwell time and the time that people spend within the MTA's network, and the fact that they have the whole network, every part of the network, that too is pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm. What's your take on some of the smart city networks that are going out there, like the Link NYC one? I mean, I look at those when I'm in New York and I see digital poster and with some other bells and whistles kind of bolted on, but I don't think of them as really smart city technology.
Well, we're very, very strong supporters of smart cities. And so you mentioned Link NYC. I mean, what that does is it provides connected solutions for the city. So we're big, big supporters of that, because if you think of the Internet of Things, and whether it's smart parking meters, trash cans, lighting systems, what it does is it provides a secure network that's trusted by the city and endorsed by the city, that third parties can tap into. So any technologies that can be deployed in the city that needs a network can tap into this network. So we're big supporters of it. We agree they are screens and beautiful screens. We actually like the screens. We think that there is an opportunity to do more with the smart cities networks that are created, and we'll see that happen. And that's going to happen, right? Technological innovation is going to continue around the Internet of Things, and that's going to create more demand for these devices, so that we have, you know, secure Wi-Fi in cities all over the world. And I think Link NYC is a good example of that. You know, whether they can sell enough advertising to support that network, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think it's been a little bit slow in terms of rolling out units. But as they roll out more units, you know, we're confident that as more units are deployed and the scale is achieved there, that, you know, there will be demand for that form of advertising. And, you know, we got a lot of questions from people saying, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of homeless people by these devices. Yeah. But if you think of payphones, and, you know, I've been living in New York City for a long time, there were always homeless people camped out by payphones, but nobody noticed it because they didn't stand out. Yeah. Now you have these devices that stand out that everybody notices. And so that's a use case for the advertising. They stand out, everybody notices them, so the advertising stands out. So we are, you know, and they're beautiful devices, and that's why people have a hard time with homeless people by them. But look, over time, they're fixing. They've obviously changed the Link NYC model since they rolled it out, and there are less homeless people associated with devices. But look, this is New York City, and you know, we all live together, and you know, we're strong believers that this is going to be a product that's going to continue to be successful, especially as it's rolled out.
Mm-hmm. Last question: what do you see happening over the next 12 to 18 months? Is there big deal that we're going to see, or is there technology that's emerging that gets you excited?
So it's hard for us. I mean, in terms of deals, obviously we can't comment on those.
Oh, sure you can.
Tried to be involved in all of them. But I would say that, yeah, the landscape is going to continue to transform. There are a lot of companies that we at PJ Solomon will be in the market with selling. There will be companies that, you know, we're advising companies to buy things, and that's happening. I mean, we're the busiest we've ever been. We have more mandates now than we've ever had before. We've grown our team. And when I say our team, it's the marketing services group here. You know, we used to just be two bankers. We're now up to seven bankers who focus on marketing services. That's just out of home and retail tech. And we're going to continue to expand the team to meet the demand. There is a high demand for bankers in this sector now. And, you know, we believe we have a strong expertise given all the transactions we've worked on. So we're going to continue to expand it. The deals I'd say you'll see going forward are continued billboard consolidation. So the large billboard operators today will continue to buy the independent media owners and operators of billboards. You're going to see digital ad networks continuing to come together. As you may know, we put Gas Station Television and Verifone, Petro Media's business together earlier this year. You know, those are the types of deals that are going to allow the sector to thrive, because when somebody owns the entire vertical, as Gas Station TV now does, as Zoom Media does in fitness centers, Captivate and elevators, you know, it really gives them a stronger foothold in an area than they had before. And so we're going to continue to see consolidation across other networks. We see that happening. And smart cities, I mean, it's a huge opportunity for us as a firm. You know, we're going to go after that market hard. You know, we have a unique expertise in that area, given the overlap of that home with retail technology. So that's going to be an area that we're going to hopefully own over the next several months and in the future years.
Very interesting. Thank you. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.